the man himself, the president of the New England Patriots. That's your official title, isn't it? Your president, El Presidente?
I guess, of the Patriots. Yeah. I like the Kraft Group. We do a lot more other than football, but no one really cares. So
that's probably true. Now, let's see. This is number six for you, correct? Starting with New Orleans. What do you know about this whole scene and this whole week and everything that's unfolding that you didn't know on your virgin trip to New Orleans for the first one?
We know a lot, that we didn't know then. And it's why I wish we were playing a team that didn't have recent experience in the Super Bowl, because I do think one competitive advantage our organization has is that as soon as we made it to the AFC Championship game and the league tells the four teams you have to start to get ready, we have computer programs, we have notebooks, we have it all set up, and it's just assigning people tasks, but the spreadsheets, the worksheets, the schedules, what you have to do are already done. Teams that haven't been in a while, I don't think they know, and they'll scramble for 3 days, and it won't be well organized. And I'm not saying, well, we're pretty well organized, but it's not because we're good. It's because we've been fortunate enough to be here, and I think that takes a lot of the frenetic nature of it. I saw Parcells on TV last night actually talking about how frenetic those first 3 or 4 days are, and we're fortunate that we don't have to deal with that.
So it's almost some form of autopilot. What's the most daunting task on that first weekend? Was it tickets? Was it accommodations? Was it meeting rooms? What was it?
I think with Indy, we're in a great hotel for the team, so that works out well. But I think in Indy, the thing that was most complicated versus other cities, it reminded us of Jacksonville a little bit, is there are literally no – the hotel inventory is much tighter than anything we've seen, even compared to Jacksonville, because in Jacksonville they brought the cruise ships in and they had the golf condos. Here there just are not hotel rooms, and certainly not quality hotel rooms. And the second challenge is that in the other Super Bowls we've been in over the six you reference, this is by far and away the smallest stadium. The capacity, I think, on game day is like 68,000. And we're always at venues where you're up well over 80. And so your share of those incremental tickets being cut back makes it a difficult challenge.
You know, there's a weird dynamic going on here, Jonathan. I think this year when you made the Super Bowl, you officially became, you know, the Yankees. You became the Cowboys of the 90s or the Cowboys of the 70s, Notre Dame. You became the team that the rest of America can't stand to watch win anymore. Somehow I don't think that bothers you all that much.
Well, I don't – however, you'd like people to think highly of you, but if they don't, just for some emotional reason, there's nothing you can do. We try to tangibly – do the right thing, both on and off the field. I know that some people look at some of the things or some of the ways our organization operates, and it doesn't always appear warm and fuzzy to the outside, but I think that's how you consistently, at least with our existing football leadership structure, how he believes you get the best results. I think we try to make up for it as an organization on the non-football side of things, but I understand if people – you know, aren't crazy about it. Yeah. Now, we did lose the last Super Bowl we were in, so if it's winning that you don't like, we got to win one here.
You are playing a New York team, a team that recently won, and America's rooting for them. That's how
I haven't heard that, but I'll.
I think it's pretty well established. America is rooting for the New York bleeping Giants.
Well.
Doesn't seem to bother him a whole lot, does it?
No. Well, the Giants, I understand why people like the franchise. It's a class franchise. It's a classy franchise. The Maras and the Tishes are a great family. I think Eli, I've been thinking about Eli a lot this week. And you think about it, you have a dad who's a big-time football player, and then you have an older brother. And you're always... I don't know, maybe the expectations were lower, but you're always just the other kid and this or that. And you're playing in New York on this big media stage, and he could have really tanked. And he had some rough stuff at the start, and instead he's really excelled, and he really is an exceptional quarterback. And I think he is a pretty classy guy too, so I understand why people might like them.
We would love to keep Peyton in the AFC. In fact, we'd love to keep him, put him in the AFC East.
You would. Let's send him to the NFC.
Are you hoping he goes to the NFC? I mean, you respect him as a competitor.
Of course. You don't want to. Look, anytime you can avoid playing Peyton Manning, I don't care what people are saying. Peyton Manning along with Brady are they've just done it for so long at such a different level in an era, and this is the thing people don't talk about. This era of the last 12 years that the two of them have been in the league was 32 teams for most of it and the salary cap. And all the other names people talk about from the past who were great players didn't have to compete in that era. And it's pretty amazing. Now maybe Aaron Rodgers will ultimately be there. Maybe Drew Brees. Maybe Eli. But I really do believe Tom and Peyton are at the upper echelon with Tom on top of Peyton. And I would prefer though that Peyton goes to the NFC and we see him once every 4 years unless we make the Super Bowl.
All week long so far, when people have been analyzing this game and this particular matchup, the X's and O's and the schematic things, generally when they're talking about the Patriots, falls into the lap of the head coach and the quarterback. All the other stuff seems to be more intangibles when people look at your chance to win this football game and what you have going for it. In your estimation, John, how much do intangibles play a role in ultimate success and outcomes when we're talking about things like spirituality or things, Robert's role, your role in getting this thing done when at the 11th hour, certainly the dedication of the season to your mom, play a role in this?
I think there's different types of intangibles, and the biggest intangible that you have with a football team is their passion and desire. That's above all else, and I think our guys have that, and they have this chemistry. They care about each other legitimately, because I've seen locker rooms where, you know, they say the words, but they don't mean it. On media day on Tuesday, having been in six locker rooms now on media day as the players are getting ready, I have never seen the camaraderie that I saw taking place there between old and new guys helping each other out, just the pictures that were being posed for. There were some other private funny moments that took place. And I think that is an intangible that carries over on to the field in a way where guys don't want to let their teammates down. They're not playing for themselves. They're playing for someone else. And I think they rely and trust each other. So I think that's the greatest intangible. Mm-hmm. I think the spirit of my mother, which has been, I do think that permeates the locker room, and I think the guys love wearing her initials over their heart this year, and I think that's provided some meaning to the season right at the start that got the whole thing ignited, and I think the fans were great about it. But the real intangible is the bond that these guys have built up with each other.
I can't imagine a more bittersweet moment that might take place at midnight on Sunday night when you are as happy as you can possibly be professionally in terms of this team, but your mom's not there to celebrate it with you. That's going to be the ultimate definition of mixed emotions, would it not?
Well, I believe she's with us, and she's just not with us physically. Mm-hmm. And you'd love to be enjoying it. And I think Robert said it last Sunday when we were leaving. Most of the people who are Patriot fans have probably lost in the last 12, 24 months somebody they care about. Mm-hmm. And they'll think about them, too, when that game's going on. If you went with your dad and your dad passed away or your grandfather. And remember when the Red Sox won that first Super Bowl, you had people saying they went to the grave sites and you know, to tell their loved ones about it. But, you know, they feel like they're with them. It's something you share. That's what's so great about sport. And if we're fortunate enough to win on Sunday, I know my mother will have been with us spiritually, in a spiritual way. And I just wish that, you know, she was there physically. But that, a lot of people have to deal with that.
Switching gears, do you have a well-thought-out theory as to why Bill this week seems to be a kinder, gentler Bill Belichick?
I don't think much about those things, and I didn't. Again, it's sort of like when Jerry says what he said about America rooting. I don't think about it, and I don't know. Bill to me is Bill. And the one thing I know about Bill, he's too smart. Anytime Bill does anything, whatever Bill is doing, it is well thought out, and there's a reason for it. And I find him just to be Bill all the time.
I think you answered the question when you said that, though, because the question is he just happy to be here, and that's why he seems to have cheerfulness about him, or is there a method to his madness?
Well, I think any time you make it to this point in the season, as he says, we're playing in February.
Right.
You know, we're playing in February. You have to be happy about that. But the pain of your season ending in February, if it does in a way that you don't want it to end, if it ends with a loss, that pain is dramatically greater than the pain of your season ending at the end of December or in January sometime. And I think everything he does at this time of the year is with a meaning and a purpose.
I don't know. I think the Ravens probably would match pain with anybody at the end of the season. Do you feel lucky this year? I mean, I know you feel lucky as a whole, healthy, you know, family and all that. In specifically, the 2011 Patriots seem to have gotten all the breaks. Does it seem that way to you?
I do feel very fortunate every day that you have your health, and we're fortunate to have some comfortable circumstances. So I do feel fortunate. I think as relates to football.
I feel like one of those team of destiny kind of deals.
I think you make it happen. I really do believe that. I don't believe that you can't get this far just on luck. You know, you can win a game in the regular season that you didn't deserve to win. I don't think you can get to the Super Bowl and not deserve it. The competition in the NFL is too great. You can win some games in the regular season, and maybe in a year if your division's weak and get to the playoffs
and meet up against Denver at home.
But we had a pretty good regular season. I mean, we were 13-3.
A great regular season.
We were 13-3, and I remember when you and I were kids, and we would both go to the old Schaefer Stadium. If someone said to you, the Patriots were going to be 13-3, you'd say, take it. I don't even care what happens in the playoffs. We're 13-3.
Well, how many 12-win seasons is that for Brady and Belichick?
It's a lot. I don't know the number.
I had the number the other day, 4 or 5 or 6.
How
many they had before he got here?
One.
None.
One, yeah, none.
I think
people take it for granted now. So we're a good football team. We're not a lucky football team.
Well, you can be both.
At that point in time. Well, absolute. By the way, I think there's always some luck involved, but I really do believe. I mean, Bill the other day, I heard him talking to the team, and he was pointing out situations where people – where he was showing film, and people call it lucky or not lucky, but in reality, somebody did something to make the play happen or didn't. And he was showing examples of things. I think you could call Sterling's play at the end of the game.
There would be
is
the best
that lucky?
Example.
I don't know. Most guys, 90% of the guys in the league, I believe, just give up. They throw their hands up at that point. They go, I got beat. The ball's their touchdown. Sterling Moore says, Coach Belichick says, play to the whistle, play to the end, make something happen. It's not over till it's over. And the kid takes his hand, he whacks the ball out. By the way, a kid that was on the street a month into this season, undrafted kid, had been cut, was on the street. He's playing hard. So that's why when people are making a big deal, oh, there are 18 undrafted rookie free agents on the team. You know what? It's the type of players that Bill wants. It's guys who understand that playing football is about working and making things happen rather than just relying on your athleticism.
I think there was an absolute increment of time where Evans had the ball and you said Baltimore's going to the Super Bowl and New England is not. Did it feel like that to you?
Absolutely. I put my head down. Bledsoe was sitting to my left. And I put my head down and I kind of whacked. I didn't whack him hard, not that I could hurt him if I wanted to, but I sort of punched him and I said, I can't believe, you know, it's ending like this or it's over. And then everyone cheered. I looked up. I was like, what happened? He's like, the kid just knocked the ball out of his hand. And because I thought it was over. I did.
Who makes the seating assignments in the box? You?
No, I don't.
Are your brothers jealous that you always get – you're at the left hand of the father?
I don't think so. You'd have to ask them that. I think they like – well, Danny likes to sit outside.
Oh, he does?
In the seats that we used to sit in occasionally. If there's somebody business-wise, that he sits out basically in seats that when we bought the stadium that we moved to in the lower bowl, and he's kept him on the visitor's side.
Does Steve and Tyler just walk in and take a seat, or do you have to say, this is yours?
I think he moved around during the game. I don't know.
I mean, if Brad Faxon took that seat, you'd say move, right, Faxon?
Jerry, I want you to sit next to me. And I don't know. You're welcome to come join us anytime. You ask Al who makes the seating arrangements. That's probably above my pay grade.
I know this is not something you want to think about, but are you going to be the owner of this team forever? Do you see yourself as Wilson? You know, 90 years old, still running the team, still being, you know.
Well, our family, I believe, is going to own the team. We're all, my brothers and I, my dad, the ownership of the team is already, I think through my generation, we'll definitely own the team, or God willing, we'll own the team, and hopefully the next generation too. But it gets hard because in the NFL, you have rules about debt and how much somebody needs to own to actually be a controlling owner. And with the where values have gone and what estate taxes are, you have to be Paul Allen. You're talking about bills that are hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and you need to be liquid. I think we structured things from way at the beginning so that, you know, our family can own it through my generation and hopefully the next one, but we'll see what happens.
Is there an organizational thread of philosophy that has held this organization in good stead from that first Super Bowl to now? And the reason I thought of that is, you know, whenever someone else takes over in your family of this franchise, there's going to be this philosophy and this kind of way to do things. Is there one that you can put your finger on that you think has done the most good?
Well, we're always thinking, not just in this business, about any of our businesses, how we can institutionalize good practice. And we're constantly playing and tweaking with that and thinking about it. And I think we wouldn't be good stewards of this franchise if, when we're talking about it, we weren't trying to practice it. But then as the next generation comes along, starting to teach them at a young age. And they'll bring their own experience set to it. But I do think there's something about having a consistent philosophy. If you look at the teams that have consistently, through the decades, been competitive with very small downtimes, it's the teams that have stayed consistent with their philosophy and not panicked when you've had one bad season or two. I look at teams like the Steelers or teams like the Giants, because they were very competitive in the pre-salary cap era, and they've been competitive in the post-salary cap era. And I think we have an idea of what that is. I probably wouldn't want to get into too many of the specifics of it, because hopefully it's a competitive advantage for us.
Does it strike you odd, changing shoes again here, that your two highest profile acquisitions at the beginning of the season, one isn't here and the other one hasn't been productive, and yet you're in the Super Bowl?
It just shows you that games aren't won in free agent signing period. it just shows you that's not the way it works. Look, both those acquisitions, you know, people criticized each of them for different reasons. And the funny thing is, the one guy that's not here, the reasons he was criticized aren't the reasons that he isn't here. Now, he didn't fit and it didn't work. But when he was here, he didn't create any waves. It wasn't the right fit for the chemistry of the team, for whatever it's worth. And in the case of Chad, Chad's worked his tush off constantly. It just something there hasn't clicked. But I think he's had a role on the team because he actually has added to the chemistry of the locker room. And I know you guys don't see it and people are going to question that, but it's true. And the season's not over yet, so let's see what happens on Sunday.
Final question. Are you superstitious? Do you and Robert have a pregame thing that goes on? And will you be nervous at 6:29 Sunday?
We're not superstitious, so I don't think there'll be any special pregame ritual. And at 6:29, I think you could say I'd be anxious rather than nervous.
Does it ever go away? It's not like the quarterback's first time he gets
hit. It only goes away when you're up by like 42 with about 5 minutes left.
Do you expect that to be the case?
Probably not, given our history. I think the last four have all been three-point games. So my guess is whatever the outcome is going to be, it will not be decided until late. Maybe fortunately, maybe unfortunately. We'll see.
Jonathan, good luck Sunday. Thanks for the conversation. Always a pleasure catching up with you.
Thank you, guys.
Jonathan Kraft with Dennis and Callahan, broadcasting from Super Bowl 46 in Indianapolis.